Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Mi'ilo Daf Chof. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today we will begin from the very bottom of Daf Yutes Omid Beis at the Mishnah. You will notice a marking in the Mishnah, a crown shape, and also a double underline with dots in it. These are explained on the outside margin under our Mivneh heading. The Mivneh is a structural note that we provide. The word Notal appears in a frame, in a crown shape, and this will be a reference to a situation where someone, the Gemara, will reveal to us that we're talking about the Gizbar, the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash. He takes something that has been sanctified. The double underline will be used to highlight the expressions Evan and Korah, or a Pruta, of the Beis HaMikdash. Now the Mishnah. Notal Evan o Korah shel Hekdish. Hare ze lo mo'al. Upon taking a stone or a beam that has been sanctified, so there is no mi'ilah violation. Nosna l'chaveroi, when he who took it gives it to his friend, gives it to someone else, who mo'al v'chaveru lo mo'al, the one who gave it is in violation of mi'ilah. He has taken it from the realm of kodesh, from the realm of sanctity, and given it to his friend, which is the realm of the common or the mundane. That is an act of mi'ilah. And the receiver, though, is not guilty of any offense. Bon'o besoch beso, hareze lo mo'al. If one were to build this beam as part of his house, so there is no mi'ilah violation. Mi'ilah is not violated until achi yodur tachtel b'shofa prutantan, until he lives in there, or under this beam or rock that was used to build this structure, until he lives there to the value of a shove pruta. The pruta being the smallest type coin, and it represents a very small value. So until he lives there for this small value of dwelling, then there is mi'ilah. Now, we are providing at this point a literal translation of the Mishnah. Things will become clearer as we learn the Gemara on this topic, though. Likewise, notal pruto shel hekdish. Someone took a coin of hekdish that was sanctified, hareze lomo, upon taking it, so there is no mi'ilah. Nosna l'chavero, when he transfers the ownership of the coin to his friend, who mo'al v'chaver lo mo'al, the giver is in transgression of mila, the receiver is not. Nosna lebalon afa pishel rochatz mo'al, if one took this coin and gave it to a bath attendant, someone, the balon is the one in charge of a bathhouse, so even if the customer who paid for the services, even if he didn't actually bathe there, there is still a mi'ila violation. Shehu omer lo, the balon, the owner of the bathhouse, can say, Hare hamerchotz posuch lefonecha, the bathhouse is open to you, he kones urchotz. So you gave me the coin, by giving it to me, you thereby acquired the services rendered by a bathhouse. So that so by paying the bath attendant, even without the actual bathing, that itself is an act that violates mi'ilah. Achiloso v'achilas chavero. Someone eats that which was sanctified, and his friend eats, and he gives to his friend to eat. This is something that we have learned already, so that we're dealing with the idea of tziruf of adding of the adding up of two less than minimum amounts to equal a minimum amount. So that if someone ate, let us say, a less than a shavah pruta worth of something that was sanctified, and he gave another pachos mishavah pruta to his friend, so they will join together to constitute a full pruta worth of violation. And therefore, he will be guilty of mi'ila. Hano'aso v'hanoyas chavero, where one personally benefits from something that was sanctified and he enabled someone else to benefit as well. We used an example in the past of taking some sanctified oil and smearing it on yourself, and he smeared it on his friend. And altogether, the value was a shova pruta. Achiloso v'anoyas chavero, hanoyoso v'achilas chavero, mitstarfim zeim zeh. Likewise, where one eats half a pruta's worth of sanctified food and gives benefit, pleasure to his friend, or the other way around, even if the two acts are experienced with a great deal of time gap between them, they still join up, and the one who caused the benefit will be guilty of me'ila. The Gemara opens up with a question dealing with the opening of the Mishnah, where we saw someone take a beam of Hegdish. Upon his taking it, so we said there's no Mi'ila. But if he gives it to his friend, so that is an act of Mi'ila. Why wouldn't you just say that by taking a beam or a stone of Hegdish from the Beis HaMikdash, that itself is an act of taking it out of the realm of the Beis HaMikdash, taking it away from sanctity? Wouldn't that itself constitute Mi'ila? So the Gemara asks, Maishnohu, what is different about the initial taker, Umaishno Chavero, and what is different between the initial taking and the giving of it to his friend? Where we said that when the original taker passed it on to Chavero, to his friend, that was an act of Mi'ila. So why the difference? Omar Shmuel, the Gizbar ha Mesuros lo Askinon. Shmuel answers that the Mishnah is focus, or the subject of the Mishnah is the temple treasurer himself. So that when he takes something, so his act of taking, he's basically an extension of the Beis HaMikdash itself. So his taking of it doesn't represent the leaving of the realm of the Beis HaMikdash. But when the Gizbar, when the treasurer hands it to someone else, to a commoner, that is an act of removing it from the domain of the Beis HaMikdash, and hence that act of giving it is the act of Mi'ila, whereby you are removing it from the realm of the Hekdash. The Gemara continues, Bono Besoch Beiso Eino Chayov. Before we go on, let us glance at the topic heading that we have provided on the outside margin, Hagdoras Tolush Mechubar, Lagabi Mi'ila, and Avodah Zarah. The Gemara will be dealing with trying to define, Tolush means something that's detached. Mechubar is something attached to the ground. And what ramifications this has with regard to Mi'ila and Avodah Zarah's idolatry. Lefi Rav, according to Rav, Hamishtachev Elabayas Osroi. One who would bow down as an act of worship to a house, to a structure, he thereby makes the house forbidden as an idol. In other words, it becomes a worshipped item. Klomar. Afapi dehu mechubal karka. Even though it's attached to the ground, and there is a posuk that says Eloheim al hehorim, their gods on the mountains. And the Gemara darshins from that, Velo Hehorim Eloheim. Only that which is on top of the mountain is considered something that's a potential idol. But the mountain itself cannot become an idol. In other words, if someone were to worship a mountain, the mountain does not become an idol, and as such, it doesn't become something forbidden. But if someone bows down to a portable, then the portable becomes forbidden as an idol. So what about a house? So the Rav's point here is that even though a house is something attached to the ground, it's nevertheless nechshav ketolosh. The ein bayis doime lahar, and in this context, a house is not similar to a mountain. Where if one were to bow to a mountain, as we said, it doesn't become forbidden. But if one bows to a house, as Rav says, the house becomes forbidden. Apparently, Rav perceives a house in its original form, namely building materials, portables. Later, they were assembled, cemented together, and attached to the ground. That doesn't remove their original identity as being portables, and hence, they can, in fact, become forbidden as something worshipped. And as we said, based on the Gezeres HaKosuv of the Torah, based on the way we approach the Pasuk, it turns out that something that itself is not attached is that which can become forbidden. And Rav is telling us that a house is legally something that's not considered attached to the ground. So now the Gemara. Bona besoch beso, eino chayov. The Gemara asks, Loma li ad shiyodur tachteha. Why is it necessary that in order to achieve mi'ila, or to be in violation of mi'ila, the person would have to dwell in the house that was made with these sanctified materials? Kevon deshanya mo'al, wouldn't there be mi'ila for his merely changing the form of the building materials? In other words, if someone had, let's say, raw rocks or logs that had been sanctified, and then I take them for building purposes, for personal building purposes, and I sand down the logs into beams, or I chisel the stones to make them fit for building. Wouldn't that be an act, a sufficient act of removal, we'll say, from the realm of sanctity? Shouldn't that be mi'ilah? Why does the Mishnah say that mi'ilah is not violated until he actually dwells there? Omar Rav. Rav answers, Kegon sheinicho al pi aruba. He took the materials as they are and placed it across the opening of the roof, we'll say. In other words, there was no change, no physical change that was done to the sanctified materials, these building materials. He simply took them and placed them as is in their position on the structure. The Gemara asks, "Vekevon deboni lo mihas moal." Why don't we say that since once he builds it into place, once it's built, boni lo has to do with something that's built, why isn't there mi'ila? Let's go over this phrase again in a more accurate fashion. We're pointing out that there was no physical change to the beams or the rocks as they were put into the structure. The Mishnah tells us that when he lives in the structure, for the value of a shavaputa, there is mi'ila. So what do we see here? We see a built structure, something constructed, a building, and mi'ila is achieved or violated using something that is right now attached. So the Gemara says, "Vekevon deboni lo." Once it is built and he lives there, mihas moal. There is a mi'ila violation. So lemo mesaya le l'rav. Should we say then this Mishnah represents a support to Rav? Before we go further, we have a marking, the triangle, and it appears in alternating directions on the outside margin under our mivne heading. We have the triangle featured, and we've call this a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a give-and-take style of discussion. So with the point facing up, lemo, messiah, l'rav, these are attempts to brings support to what Rav will say. And with the triangle inverted, that will be a rejection. So, the Gemara says, let us suggest that our Mishnah supports Rav. The Omar Rav, Hamishtacha Velabayis, also one who would bow down to a house, the house becomes forbidden. Now, why does Rav say that? Because Rav looks at a house, even though it's attached, it is detached. It's considered detached. Now, regarding Mi'ilah, we know that Mi'ilah is something that's violated only with regard to benefit from something that is detached. We saw a limud from Truma. Truma is something that is detached, and it then becomes Truma. So too, Mi'ilah. Mi'ilah is something violated only when you're dealing with something that's detached. So we have in our Mishnah someone living in a house, and we're saying that he is in violation of Mi'ilah. This shows us then that the house is viewed from the Mishnah's standpoint as something detached, thereby enabling Mi'ilah to be violated. So that we have a Mishnah describing a house as detached from the ground. Namely, we're looking at its original form, and it was in building materials, which were portables. We can then say that our Mishnah supports Rav, because Rav, albeit in a different topic, namely idolatry, but Rav comes to the same conclusion, that a house is something that's considered detached. And we see that because Rav says bowing to a house causes it to be forbidden. If it were viewed as attached, like a mountain, so it wouldn't become an idol. So that our Mishnah would seem to support Rav. The triangle, as you can see now, flips over and rejects this attempt. Omar Rav Acho Brei Rav Iko, Hano Hanires Le'enayim Osra Torah. That is, in general, a house is considered attached. And therefore, we can't say that our Mishnah will support Rav. But you'll ask, if a house is considered attached, so why is there any Mi'ilah? So we look at the Rashi, who explains this idea of Hano Nires Lainayim. There's a little star that you'll notice in the Rashi, where a few lines down from here, there's a squiggle on line word, Le'olam. Le'olam Eimaloch. Reading now in the Rashi, Tamishtacha Velabayis Lo Osro, that as far as our Mishnah is concerned, our Mishnah, which deals with laws of Mi'ilah, would take the position that if one were to bow to a house, the house would not become forbidden, unlike Rav. De Kimechubor Domi, the house is viewed as attached. Vochinami, Kevon de Boni Lo Besid, here in our case of the structure built with sanctified building materials, once they are attached with cement, kimechubor domi, they're considered attached. The e amris imkein amai moalin bo. Then you'll ask, well, then why should there be mi'ilah? If, as we said before, mi'ilah is something that applies only to something that's detached, why should the house generate a mi'ilah violation? Mishum, the Rashi explains what the Gemara said, Tahano hanira leinayim osra Torah b'mi'ilah. What the Torah forbids is deriving some type of obvious benefit from that which is sanctified. The koira zu shebona bebinyan, the beam that had been sanctified that was built into a structure, hano hanires leinayim hi. V'lochei ulohochi molin. It's hano that you can see, which apparently is associated with the fact that the beam is something that's a visible item, and one is now living under this beam that had been sanctified. That's called pleasure that is visible. And that is what the Torah assers when it says that one is in violation of Mi'ilah. The Gemara goes on and says, once again, Leimo Misayale, can we say that the following supports Rav? Hador Bebayis Shel Hekdish, someone who lives in a house that had been sanctified, Kevon Shinehene Mimeno Moal. Once he derives benefit from the house, he is in violation of Mi'ilah. Now, What do we see? We see that the house must be considered detached. And therefore, it would become forbidden if it had been worshipped as well, just like Rav says. Omar Reish Lakish, Hossam, the case of the house is b'shegdisho ulebesov bono. It was sanctified in its portable form, in as raw building material. And once the raw building material was sanctified, he then built it. So that it's not this source that speaks about a house being responsible for a me'ila violation is not an indication that a house is considered detached, but rather the sanctity was imposed on this house when it was still in a literally portable fashion. But a completely constructed house, and then you want to talk about it, let's say Rav's din of then worshipping it, we could not conclude from this case that the house would become forbidden, because this case is speaking about the sanctity that was imposed on the materials here when they were still in a portable fashion. Aval bonoi ulebesov hikdesho mai. Well, according to the way Reish Lakish is learning this, what would be the din then if it were first built and then sanctified? Lo mo'al. It would then stand to reason that there would be no me'ila violation. In other words, we're saying that the me'ila violation here was only because it was sanctified in its portable form. But had it been built first, it would not, built first and then sanctified, it would not result in me'ila. Well, this inference then gives rise to a question. Now we have a triangle to show the direction the Gemara is taking. This would be at this point the Gemara wants to say, well, then we should be able to say that we have a support for Rav. Well, how's that? My irya rohit v'toni. If it's so, like you're trying to imply, that had it been built and then sanctified, it would not result in me'ila, then why does the Tana run, rohit is to run and run to teach a case of non-me'ila in a different topic? The Tana says, Hador bebayis shel me'ora lo mo'al. If one were to dwell in a dwelling in a cave, let us say there was someone had sanctified, was a property owner, and on his property he owned a cave that had a dwelling in it. If someone were to have sanctified his cave property, and then someone went ahead and lived in it, this source is saying there would be no me'ila. So in order for the Tana, for this Tanaic source, this and the previous framed section, in order to come up with a case of non-me'ila, he had to come up with this cave story. Well, if our conclusion before, if Reish Lakish's conclusion was correct, along with its inference, lema, then the source should have said, Hador bebayis shelavonim, shebono ulubesof higdisho lo mo'al. You could have given a non-mo'al case within a constructed house, as opposed to a cave house, which is a naturally formed dwelling. But now, the source regarding a built house didn't make this distinction. Apparently, that all cases of houses, even if they were built and then sanctified, there would be me'ila. That would show us then that the house is viewed as something detached, which would then in fact support Rav. The Gemara answers no. I will tell you once again that the house, if it were first built and then sanctified, it would not result in mi'ilah, because it is considered attached. Then you'll ask, well, why does it, in order to come up with a non-mi'ilah situation, why did you have to come up with the cave story? So to this we answer, Amri, ha psikole. The case of the cave is unqualified. It is always a case where there will be no mi'ilah, because a cave is truly attached from time immemorial, from creation. Ha, the case of a house, lo psikole. It's not an unqualified situation. In other words, the case of the house, if it were built with sanctified materials, so there would be mi'ilah. If it were built and then only after constructed, then sanctified, there in fact would be no mi'ilah. So since the house situation is something that is qualified, the Tana wasn't interested in teaching the case of the house in order to come up with a lo mo'al situation. Let's just repeat that again. We're saying, in truth, we could describe a house as well as being lo mo'al. But the Tana wanted to teach a case where there would be lo mo'al in an unqualified, giving an unqualified example, and that's why he gave the example of the cave. But in truth, a house too could have been lo mo'al, and that would be had it been built and only later sanctified. And why is it lo mo'al? Because a house is considered attached, unlike Rav. That is the end of the fifth parak of Mi'ilah. And now we turn to the Mishnah, which begins the sixth and final parak of this Masechta. The Mishnah. Hashaliach she'osa shlichuso. An agent, someone sent to fulfill a mission, who was asked to take some sanctified funds, some monies that were someone had been makdish, and he went and fulfilled the request of the balabayas, the owner. The Mishnah says, balabayas mo'al, the owner is in violation of mi'ilah. It's pointed out, and we've made this point in the past, that shlichus, in the case of mi'ilah, is learned from truma. Namely, just like in the case of the tithing of one's produce can be done through an agent. In other words, if I own a pile of harvested fruits, I can ask someone else to take off the tithe, and I, the owner, have thereby fulfilled the obligation of taking off the truma. Similarly, by mi'ilah, the institution of agency exists, whereby the owner can instruct someone else to it can be done. It's forbidden. But if an owner instructs someone to take financial something of value that belongs to the Beis Hamikdash, and then that he had sanctified, and he asks the agent to sell it or to use monies to buy something, the owner is in violation. However, lo osa shlichuso, if the agent did not fulfill the request of the owner, but rather did something different, hashliach mo'al ketzat. Now, the Mishnah illustrates this last point. Omar lo tein bosor l'orchim. An owner had some sanctified meat, and he said, I want you to serve this meat to my guests. Venosan lohem koved. And instead of taking the meat, he gave them liver. Koved venosan bosor. Or, if the owner instructed, serve my guests liver, and he gave them a portion of meat. Hashaliach mo'al. The agent is in violation of mi'ilah, because he didn't do what the owner instructed him to do. Omar loy tain lohem chaticha chaticha. If an owner asked his agent to give his guests one piece of meat, the meat having been sanctified, v'hu omer tlu shtayim shtayim, and the the waiter or the agent, the shaliach, he said to the guests, take each one of you two pieces. Vehem notlu shalosh, and each guest took three pieces. Kulam mo'alu, each one of them is in violation of mi'ilah. The first piece, well, the shliach did what he was expected to do by serving that first piece. And as we said before, if the shliach does what he was sent to do, the act reflects back onto the original sender, so that the balabayas is in violation. As far as the second piece is concerned, well, the owner didn't instruct that to be served. That was what the waiter offered. So he is considered in violation for that second piece. The third piece, the guests took on their own. So they have violated mi'ilah. Turning now to Amud Beis, the Gemara. Before we learn the Gemara, let us glance at the outside margin where we see a nosei, a topic heading. The Gemara will deal with one point, is Moni Masnisen, who is the author of our Mishnah. And the topic that will come under discussion, the second point, in addition to the question of who is the author of the Mishnah presents the following idea. Kol milsa demimlech alei shaliach. Any item that the agent, the shaliach, will come back to consult with the original sender. Chachomim, as opposed to Rabbi Kiva, we'll see there's a machlokes tanoim. The Chachomim hold that they represent two different items. We'll see illustrations of this idea as we go on in the Gemara. So if an agent is asked to achieve one particular item, and he doesn't do that, let us say that that item or that goal is not attainable, and he comes back to consult about an alternative. So it must be that the alternative is certainly similar to the original item, otherwise he wouldn't come to consult about it. So the issue is, the second item that the agent comes to consult about, is that considered a separate item, a distinctly different thing? Well, that's what the Chachamim hold. Rabbi Akiva says, Chad Mina. The second item is classified as being the same as the first item. Once again, these principles will become clear when we apply examples. Nafgamina linedorim, the classification of that second item concerning which the agent comes to consult about when he finds that the first item is unattainable, there is a practical bearing regarding the realm of vows. Deim nodar mizeh, if a person, let us say, had vowed not to eat bosar. That's just an example. He had vowed not to eat bosar. Yeah, osur lo gam boze koved. He will be forbidden to eat liver. That would fit in with Rabbi Akiva's approach. If these two items are considered one entity, one item, then a vow concerning one would cover the other as well. In our Mishnah, we saw a reference to basar and koved, meat and liver. Imagine you send someone to a store to buy for you some meat. He goes to the store and finds that the meat is sold out, but in the meat department they still have liver. You, as an agent, will come and consult with the one who sent you and said, listen, there is no more meat around, but there is liver. Would you like me to buy for you liver? Our Mishnah seems to view the two as very distinct items. And where did we see that in the Mishnah? Well, in the Mishnah, we were taught that if you sent someone out to buy for you meat, or you sent someone to serve your guests meat, and the agent or the waiter served them liver, both being sanctified. The Mishnah said that the waiter, the agent, is in violation and not the owner, because the owner's will has not been fulfilled. In other words, by serving liver when you were instructed to serve meat, the liver represents something other than meat, as far as Me'ilah is concerned, as far as our Mishnah is concerned. Because if the liver was one in the same as meat, and he had been instructed to serve them meat, and went ahead and served his guest liver, then he would be in fulfillment of what his original instructions were, and then the owner would be in violation. But yet the Mishnah says that the owner is not in violation, the waiter is in violation. So now we turn to the Gemara. Man Tana, who is the author of the idea, which is also our Mishnah, the Chol Milsa de Mimlech Allah Shaliach, anything that a agent would come back to consult with the owner about, Tarti Mili Havyan, are considered two separate things. In our Mishnah, we saw that the agent was instructed to serve the guests meat, and he went ahead and served them liver. If you had asked someone, like we said before, we're being a little repetitious right now, but if you had asked someone to go buy for you some meat, and he went to the store and found the meat sold out, the agent inevitably would come back and ask, well, I couldn't find any meat, would you like me to buy liver for you? So the liver is an example of something that an agent would consult with the one who sent him. He would consult with him, would you like that? So that's what we have in our Gemara. We have this in the singular quotation marks, called Milsa de Mimlech Alo Shliach Tarti Mili Havyan, that they are considered two separate things. How do we know from our Mishnah that that's the Mishnah's point of view? Because the Mishnah said that when, having been instructed to serve meat, he went ahead and served them liver, the agent was guilty of Mi'ilah and not the owner, indicating that the liver is something that is not in fulfillment of what the Balabayas had sent the agent to fulfill. So who is the author? Now you'll notice we have a diamond that appears under our Mivneh heading in the outside margin. Shuvos la Sheila Moni Masis, and these are responses. We have Rav Chisda and Abaye a couple lines later dealing with offering suggestions of who the author of the Mishnah is. So, Amar Rav Chisda, Deloi Karebi Akiva. Rav Chisda is of the opinion that our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Akiva. Disnan, here we have a Tanaic source in which Rabbi Akiva appears. Hanoider min hayerek, one who swore not to benefit from yerek. Yerek, loosely translated as are vegetables. Muter bediluin. It is mutter for that person who vowed not to eat yerek. He is allowed to consume diluin. Diluin is some type of vegetation. And being that he swore not to benefit from yerek, that doesn't seem to include diluin. Rabbi Kiva Oser. Rabbi Kiva says, look, if you swore not to eat from yerek, you cannot eat from diluin either. What can we say about the relationship between Yerek and Diluin? Well, like we said before, if you were to send someone to the market to buy for you Yerek, and he came back and said, listen, I found there was no Yerek still in the market, but would you like me to buy for you some Diluin? So Diluin is something that the Shaliach would consult about on the heels of an instruction to get Yerek. According to the Tanakhama, they are two different things. And we see that because if he vowed not to eat Yerek, he's still allowed to consume Diluin. Rabbi Akiva says, no, he vowed not to eat Yerek. A Shaliach would consult concerning Diluin in a case when he was sent out to buy it. Well, that's enough to make the Diluin usser in this case, under the vow of Yerek. because something a shaliach would consult about is considered one and the same with the original item. And he vowed not to eat yerek. Tiluin are also usur, according to Rabbi Akiva. Our Mishnah, though, is not like that. Our Mishnah described kaveit, something a shaliach would consult about after he was asked to buy meat. And we saw that the shaliach, instead of serving meat, which he was asked to do, served liver. The shaliach, the agent, is in violation of milah, not the original balabayas. Abaye Omar Afilu Temo Rabbi Akiva. Our Mishnah that featured Bosar and Kaveid could fit in with Rabbi, could have been authored by Rabbi Akiva also. Now, according to Rabbi Akiva, Bosar and Kaveid are one in the same. The question then is, if you say that, then why is the shaliach, the agent, in violation? If he was asked to serve Bosar, and he gave them Kaveid, which is also, according to Rabbi Akiva, Bosar, because that is something an emissary would consult about. So why is it that the shaliach is in violation of Mi'ilah? After all, he did what he was asked to do. And we know that agents that do what they're asked to do in the realm of Mi'ilah, their action reflects back on the sender, the balabayas. So how can our Mishnah fit into Rabbi Akiva? The Gemara explains, Mi lo boi le'im luchi, shouldn't he have come to ask? Part of the definition of there being one and the same is that it's something that an emissary, an agent, would consult about. So in our Mishnah, did the waiter consult about it? Well, he didn't. So since he didn't bother consulting with the balabayas, what he did on his own. He wasn't doing it as an act of agency of the balabayas. It is true that liver can possibly be considered the same as bosar, but that's only a result of having consulted about it. In our Mishnah, we didn't see the agent, the waiter, consulting about the serving of the liver, and therefore it's considered an act he did on his own. And therefore, the agent himself is moel and not the balabayas. Ki omru rabbonon kamei de rava, when the rabbonon, when the other scholars said over to Rava this answer of Abaye, in other words, that our Mishnah could be in accordance with Rabbi Akiva as well, Omar Lehu, Rava responded and said, Shapir ko Omar Nachmeni. Nachmeni is a nickname for Abaye. So Rava is saying, Abaye says, very well, I like his answer. Now the Gemara asks, Man Tana de Polig Ole de Rabbi Akiva. Who is the Tana that disagrees with Rabbi Akiva, namely, something an agent would consult about, according to this other opinion other than Rabbi Akiva? The fact that the agent comes to consult about it shows us it's a different item. As we said before, kol milsa de mimlecha le shaliach, tarti mili. So who is the Tana that holds tarti mili? Answer, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, he. It turns out to be Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, Desanya. We have a Tanaic source. Reb Shimon will appear in the latter part of this source, in the second half. So the source says, Hanodir min habosar, osur b'chol minei bosar, one who swore not to eat or benefit from bosar, he cannot eat from any cut of meat. The osur barosh ubaraglayim bekono bekoved ubalev, and he's also forbidden to eat from the head, the legs. The kona is the windpipe, the koved liver and heart. Lev is the heart. The osur bebesar ofos, this person who swore not to eat meat cannot eat meat of fowls, including chickens. Umuter bebesar dogim chagovim. However, his vow does not cover the meat of fish, nor of locusts. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Matir, Barosh, Ubraglaim, Bekono, Ubekoved, Ubeoifois. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that if someone swore not to eat basar, he would be allowed these other parts, head, feet, kone, and liver, and fish, and ofos, and fowl. We've emphasized with a dashed underline, koved, the fact that Rav Shmuel is saying that the person who vowed not to eat meat is allowed to eat kaved shows that he holds they are two separate things. And as we explained before, a shliach, upon finding the meat freezer empty but still liver available, he would come to consult, would you like me to buy you liver? The fact that Rav Shmuel says that the vow of not eating meat does not cover the liver. The liver is considered a separate item. V'chein hoya Rav Shmuel omer, kirvayim lav boser, hein, kirvayim are innards, like organ meat, is not considered meat. V'ochlein lav bar inish. And someone who were to spend money on buying that, money that he could have used otherwise to buy meat, but uses the money to buy organs, is considered a non, he's not considered part of the community, meaning he's viewed as a subhuman. So that Rav Shmuel has a very definitive stance that organ meat, kirbayim, and we can focus it for our purposes on liver, is not considered basar. Just parenthetically, when we say not considered basar, it's more in the realm of speech and the way people perceive things. However, as far as issues concerning meat and milk, the liver definitely is considered of a meat nature, and you wouldn't be able to cook liver, let us say, together with milk. The Gemara now asks, Ulatana Kama, and actually before we go on in the Gemara, let's glance at the outside margin, the Nosei heading. I have a Nosei Mivne heading, Man Tana de Polagar Bekiva. We're analyzing this Tana, namely Rav Shmuel Eliel, who argues with Rabbi Kiva. The double underlining is part of that which we've learned already. It emphasizes the words Osir and Mutter. We will engage in an analysis of Birur Shita Satana Kama, and analyzing or clarifying the opinion of the Tana Kama, the first opinion, the Anodir Min HaBosar, one who swore not to eat Bosar, also b'besar ofos, mutar b'dogim. Why the distinction? Why yes? Why does meat yes include fowl and not include fish? So we have a question, and this is, we call this a long question. You can see the kuflets encircled to the meter right hand side of the Gemara test with a descending vertical dashed line. The Gemara asks, Ulatana kamo, mai shno b'besar ofos, Mishum derogil inish de omar lo ashkichi bisra de chiyusa vasoi bisra de tzifra. Fowl meat, bird meat, chicken, for example, is considered in the eyes of the Tana Kama basar. And why is that? Because people will say, listen, I couldn't find any red meat or animal meat. I would therefore bring. Should I therefore bring a chicken? In other words, we see that they're one and the same. People will readily exchange, we'll say, in the absence of meat, they will serve chicken. Well, I hachi, by the same token, hachi nami, ovid inish lememra, people will say, lo ashichi bistro dechiyusav asoi dogim. Well, I couldn't find any meat to serve, so I went ahead and served fish. So that just like we find that chicken is used as an exchange for meat, fish as well is used as an exchange for meat. That being the case, why in this Tanaic source do we see that the Tana Kama holds that one who swore not to eat basar is bound or is forbidden to eat chicken, but allowed to eat fish? A triangle is employed in our markings here to represent, as our Mivneh explanation says in the outside margin, Shlavim Barav Popo Lasbir Hanal. These are stages in trying to explain the issue of this distinction between fish and chicken. So these are stages. So the Omar Rav Papa, the Yoim HaKoza Askinon. the source concerning the person who vowed not to eat meat, that source is dealing with someone on a day that he bloodlet. The lo ochil inish dogim, a person after bloodletting, for healthful reasons, will not eat fish. Therefore, when a person swears not to eat something, he's swearing not to eat something that he otherwise would eat. Would he eat fish? No. He wouldn't eat fish. Therefore, the vow that he took never covered the fish in the first place, because he's only swearing to ban himself from that which he otherwise would eat. Otherwise meaning without the vow. With regard to fish, even without the vow, he wouldn't eat it. Therefore, the vow doesn't cover the fish. The Gemara asks, if the source is describing someone that just bloodlet, Ihochi Tzifronami, Nechol, let him be allowed to eat chicken as well. The Omar Shmuel, on what grounds are we saying that he should be allowed to eat the chicken? Because a person on a day that he bloodlet would not eat chicken at all. Therefore, his vow doesn't cover the chicken. So why does the source say that if he swore not to eat meat, he's not allowed to eat chicken? The Gemara goes on to show how chicken, that foul meat, is something that a person who bloodlet would not eat. The Omar Shmuel, the Mesukar, one who bloodlet, the Ochal Tzifra, and eat foul meat, Parach Libe Ketzifra, his heart will flutter just like a bird. The Ode Tanya, and we have a Tanaic source that says, Ein Mekizin Dam, Lo Al Hadogim, Velo Al Ha'oifois, Velo Al Besar Maliach, that a person should not bloodlet and then eat fish and or chicken or salted meat, preserved meat. So we see from here that a person who bloodlet will distance himself from chicken. Therefore, if a person swore not to eat meat, and you're talking and you're saying that that source is talking about a person who just bloodlet, so his vow should not cover the foul meat, just like it doesn't cover the fish. Elo Omar of Papa, we've just now shown how the Yom HaKoza approach, the to set up the source above on a regarding a day that he bloodlet, doesn't work out so well. Elo Omar of Papa, B'yoma Dekaivin Le'ainei Askinan. We're talking about someone who took the vow on a day that he had was experiencing eye pains. A person who experiences eye pains, the lo ochil bogim, he will not eat fish. He would eat chicken, he would eat meat, but he would not eat fish. So therefore, when he vowed not to eat meat, he was vowing concerning things that otherwise he would have otherwise eaten. But since we're saying that the source is talking about a person who just bloodlet, he wouldn't eat fish. Being that he would not eat fish, his vow doesn't cover them, because as we said, and we said a few times, vows cover only those things that he otherwise, without the vow, would have eaten. But in the case of a person who has an eye ache, he wouldn't eat fish in the first place. Therefore, his vow doesn't come to ban it. Omar loy tein lo chaticha. Chaticha. V'hu Omar tlu shtayim shtayim. And the guests, each one took actually three pieces. The Mishnah said, kulon mo'alu. Shmamino, can we conclude from our Mishnah that Moisif al Shlichuso Havio Shaliach, an agent that went beyond that which the owner sent him out to do, he's Moisif al Shlichuso, the Shlichus remains, the agency, the institution of agency remains, stays intact. In our Mishnah, it had taught kulon walu, everyone, the owner, the waiter, and the guests. So when we have in our Mishnah a shaliach that was instructed to serve one piece, but he was moisif al dvarav, he went ahead and served, or said, he told them, take two pieces. And we saw in the Mishnah that the balabayas is also considered moyel, so that we see that the institution of agency remains, even though the shaliach went beyond that which the owner told him. So it would then stand to reason that moisif al shlichuso is considered still to be an acting in agency, and he is a good shaliach. This has ramifications for other areas of halacha as well, where a shliach does more than he was asked to do. Does that cancel the shlichus? So we see from here, no, it doesn't cancel the shlichus. Omar Rav Sheshes rejects this conclusion. The Omar Shaliach, here the Shaliach said, Tul achas midaito. Take one portion of meat, because this is the owner's request. This is what he wants. The achas midati. And take a second piece on my account. In other words, the second piece is not what the Balabaya said. So that is why, since he split it up in this explicit fashion, that's why we say that both the Balabayas and the Shlich are Moyo. Let us glance at the Rashi on this. You'll find Rashi toward the end of the page, Omar Rav Sheshes, Mehocha lo tifshot, from this case of the waiter serving the meat, and eventually three portions are taken, we are not to conclude that which was suggested, that maybe we should conclude that Moisif Ashlichuso, he remains a shaliach. Da'ocha hainu taimo de balabayas nami mo'al. Here, you know why the balabayas was mo'al. Mishum de omar shaliach midaito. Da'ochi omar shlicholorchem. Thusly, the waiter said to the guests, Tlu lochem shtei chaticho, so echod midaitu shabalabayas, one piece, that's on account of the owner, the host. The idach, the second piece, midati, based on my word, not based on the owner's instruction. The idach lochu midaiton, and the third piece they took on their own. Tohocha vadai moisif have. In this case, he is very clearly adding to his shlichus. He's adding to his agency. Ulekach mo'al. That's why he is also guilty of me'ilah. So it's because he said, take the second piece on my word, almost making the second piece a separate act, or a separate element in this original shlichus. So that it's not a standard case of a shliach simply adding to what the original mission was. It could be in such a case that would cancel the shlichus. But here, the second piece doesn't represent an addition to the original mission, but rather the second piece is a truly separate entity, insofar as the waiter is saying, take the second piece on my account and not on account of what the owner expects. But now you might ask the question that is this not obvious? Do I need a Mishnah to tell me that a waiter who says, take one piece on account of the owner, take the second piece on my account? And then the Mishnah has to tell us that each one of them, that all of them are in violation of Mi'ilah. That seems to be very obvious. The Gemara at the top of Daf Chof Aleph says, Mahu detema, had I not had the Mishnah telling me that they are all moyel, I would have thought, Okar shaliach shlichusei de balabayis velo limo. I would have thought that the shaliach, the emissary, the agent here, is actually undoing that which the balabayis had requested. Therefore, Komash Malon, the Mishnah reveals to us that since, as we explained earlier, as Rav Sheshes explained, the agent said, take the first one on account of the balabayis, that is considered a maintenance of his original charge, his original shlichus. Without this having been spelt out, I would have thought that the fact that he said take two, as opposed to the one that he was instructed to offer, that that was an undoing of the shlichus. And had that been the case, then there would have been, then the balabayis would not have been moel. So this is what we are, this is what Rav Sheshes is revealing to us in terms of what the intent of the Mishnah is, that the since the shaliach spells out, take the first on account of the balabayis, the original shlichus is preserved, and therefore the balabayis is also moel. But to use this as an example of a shliach that's moisif al shlichuso, this we cannot do. Because, in fact, we could say this is a shliach separating the two items, one from the other, the two portions one from the other, and not simply expanding upon what his original agency was. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.